forgotten, been forgotten, I do. I've been married a long time ago. Where did you come from? Where did you go? Where did you come from, cotton, I do?
The stats, the salt, the sanity. And every so often, they talk about sports, too. Here is Eric Dorsch, Russ Ivanek, and Justin Marcus. This is Armchair Sports Talk.
As the late, great Burt Reynolds said, it's all fun and games until the banjos start. And if you don't get that reference, well, you've probably never been told you have a pretty mouth either. This is the Armchair Sports Talk Podcast. I am your host, Eric Dorsch. Again, you know what? These songs mean nothing to our episodes. It's just fun because I want to see the reactions I get. And this time, it really was a deliverance. I had a little bald man dancing without his shirt off to Cotton Eye Joe. Like, it's just... Oh, it's horrifying. Like I said before, I'm your host, Eric Dorsch. We have, as always, the shocked and awed Statman Russ Ivanek. Rusty, I think I did something to mess you up a little bit there.
A Deliverance reference and Cotton Eye Joe. We just flew back from the late 90s, and boy, are my arms tired.
Well, but and I think about this, though. That is the easiest song ever.
Not.
That's a big hit. And all it is that over and over again. If it hadn't been for Cotton Eye Joe, I'd been married a long time ago. My question is, you're not that old. Were you marrying like a cousin or something that like you met very early on in life?
Yes, probably.
Oh, gosh. Sergeant Salty, it's weird. You got the beard. There's nothing up there. All your hair just migrated to the midsection.
Where did you come from? Where did you go? Where's my hair? Because I don't know.
Oh, my God.
That's the problem.
All right, and the pod. We're done.
Yeah, you win. You win. There you go. How are we doing today, guys, though? Everybody doing good? It's been an interesting week in sports. We've got a lot to talk about. Let's lead it off. Jay, you kind of said it early on, and we're throughout the podcast, we're going to look for openings to create a bet, but you're not doing good when it comes to these bets you're putting on us. Most recently is the Jaguars bet. It's just not going well for you right now.
No, you know what? I've done a little bit of a self-audit on these last couple pods and some of the stances I've taken on things and how wrong I've been. I'm here to right all those wrongs today. I've become a person that believes in superstitions, if you will. I'm a hockey player getting ready for the playoffs. I'm about to wear the same underwear every time I do this podcast. I gotta fix the juju in the room for me right now.
Please don't do that. Please change.
I'm going to.
But Russ, I think you and I are both kind of on the same wavelength here. We want to get this guy to a casino and just bet the opposite. Let him make his picks, then we'll go the other way.
He is prolific with how often he just goes exactly the wrong way.
Well, he went pretty wrong this past week. Jaguars fall to Detroit Lions. We got a win coming off the bye. It was great. We needed it quite a bit. 34-16 for the Lions. Overall, pretty great week. I mean, we saw what we wanted to see out of DeAndre Swift. 14 carries, 116 yards. Obviously, a 54-yard run, big chunk play there. But still, counts it all together. Kenny Golladay, four catches, 105 yards. I want to say that again for everyone. No touchdowns, a little crazy to see. Jay, your boy TJ Hockenson kind of got left out. Two catches, 17 yards. It should have been three catches because they threw him four times on first, second, third, and fourth down. One of them wasn't his fault. Fullback kind of got greedy and decided to take the football away from him. But TJ Hockenson playing well. Overall, Matt Stafford, 19 of 31, 223, 1-1. This was just kind of an overall perfect game. They kind of did everything well. The only thing is, I don't know how much positivity you can take away from it, Jay, because it's the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Yeah, no, for the Lions for 1 week, yeah, it was good. But, like, they win, and they still piss me off. And if that doesn't, like, underline, like, I see bigger problems than winning on a Sunday, like, it's just they won and I was upset. Like, it was a hard-hitting game. They're facing Minshew. The mustache is a novelty that needs to go away. Galladay's the best player on the field. Like, it's another week where it's like, great, that looked good. Congratulations, you put a quarterback under pressure. That's what you're supposed to do every damn week, not just for a novelty. Like, the Lions' defense is compared to Minshew's mustache. It's a novelty. It's not perfect. It's not like it. I don't feel good about winning on Sundays right now, unless it's a meaningful game. And I don't know where you guys are at, but this didn't move the needle for me. I was mad that they won.
I thought the Lions were like Gardner Minshew's mustache because it's lacking a lot of coverage. That's what I thought you were going for on that one.
I like that.
come on.
But there's some value to what he's saying, because like for instance, three of the drives that we scored on came from penalties and errors of the Jaguars that put us in a position to score. We had no business, and we got lucky off of some penalties.
Oh yeah,
that's annoying.
Stafford had that big chunk play to Galladay on the free play, and that helped and all that. I get it. It's, but see, to me, the defense is going to be messed up. I'm done accepting that we're going to get a lot out of this defense. Like, we're going against Atlanta. Atlanta is literally 1-5 right now. They're favored in this game. Atlanta shouldn't be favored for the rest of the season after how they got started, but they are. I'm not moving on to Atlanta. I'm just pointing out the fact that it shouldn't really be that way, and I've accepted this defense is going to be bad. But I'm more looking at this offense, because right now, with the pieces that are there, there is no way on earth coming out of a game with less than 3 or 4 touchdowns is acceptable. I mean, obviously they did that this past week. You have Swift playing well. AP was doing well. We didn't see as much of him as we probably would have liked. Galladay, Amendola, Marvin, TJ Hockenson, Matt Stafford. You notice I'm leaving one name off the list. And that's the guy that was supposed to be the number one back going into the season. Guys, where is Kerryon?
Dude, one of my notes today is, what is carry on?
Why is carry on?
Who is carry on? That's what I want to know. Because he ain't carrying the ball.
Bevel actually had comments on that, because someone asked him, and he basically went into this whole thing of how the rotation is supposed to work, which was troubling on many accounts. But he basically said, so Adrian gets the start. Peterson's going to be this guy that starts. They mix Swift in, and if he's going good, they give him more. Well, we finally saw that happen. And then he goes, well, Kerryon, he's kind of our third down guy. Third down runner, third down protection back. First off, how do you kind of be the third down guy?
You either are or aren't, yeah.
Right, and it's that apparently is his intended role? Mm. That's a rough look.
It's that thing of, obviously, there was no preseason. The training camp was even a little bit of a hodgepodge. But what I need to know is, after the day after the draft, okay, you knew Swift and Kerryon. AP came in later, and you kind of figured where he'd fit into the mold. But going into this season, guys, if I had looked at you and said, hey, by the way, Kerryon Johnson is just going to be an afterthought on this team, you go, oh, okay, so he got hurt early. No, he's healthy. He's playing. Oh, okay, so someone had a real breakout season. I don't know that anyone really had a breakout season. They've had both guys have had good games. You'd be befuddled that Kerryon was supposed to be that number one back. We all kind of thought if he could stay on the field and stay healthy, it'd be very hard for AP and Swift to find ways on the field other than in gimmicky ways or third down back kind of thing. That's not happening. I don't know what they're seeing. I mean, it's working in a way. Swift is playing very well. AP is kind of gotten a resurgence. I think we're going to see AP level off a little bit because he's older. He can't take the carries the way he used to be able to. But it's just that thing of whatever. I don't know what they're seeing in practice, but Kerryon must be looking very, very bad, Jay, for him not to be on the field as, you know, as frequently as he theoretically should be.
You know what it smells like?
Oh, God.
It smells like when we had LeGarrette Blount. Oh, say that again?
Oh, I said teen spirit, because you asked what it smells like.
Yes, that is also what it smells like. But it smells like LeGarrette Blount, because that's what Blount was. He was a third down back, maybe, kind of. And we brought him in on certain situations. That Kerryon, that's why I put, what is Kerryon Johnson? Because, like, this Amir Abdullah, Kerryon Johnson, LeGarrette Blount, same person. Like, it's, like, different parts of careers. But, like, what are we, like, I have a feeling that the Lions' backfield is going to be their demise for the rest of the season, which I'll get to later. But I don't think they know what they're doing. We're like, I'm befuddled.
See, it's weird one to say because Jay, you were one of the people, all three of us were, but you were definitely one of the guys that was kind of about Kerryon. You thought he was the guy, thought he was going to be good, and we're not seeing it. But I don't know that their backfield is going to be their downfall. I just think what we saw last year in the passing attack is about to come to fruition in the running game. Whoever's running it well that day is going to get chunk yards. There's just you until they stop you. We're going to run you, whether that's you carry the ball 14 times, or you carry the ball 27 times. If you're moving the sticks and you're helping us, you know, balance out the offense, it's you. And but the problem with that is you're going to burn guys out left and right. You know, there needs to be some, like, no team's got that one. Okay, well, one team, the Tennessee Titans, have that workhorse they just give the ball to every time and don't sub out and give rest to. Everyone else, it's a two-headed monster every time.
My one comment on that is the hot hand approach. That comes with the assumption that someone will be good.
Oh, well, yeah, I get that.
And if no one is good in a given week and you haven't established a true number one running back, or you know, then you're fucked. You're fucking yourself before you even start.
Well, yeah, but I think part of it's going to more be it's a hot hand if there's a hot hand there. If there isn't, then Bevel's just going to go back to the passing attack and say, okay, Galladay, Marvin, Amendola, Hawkinson, Jesse James, we can find a way to move the ball with you guys. And to all honesty, I turning away from the running game a little bit, Stafford really is doing a good job of really, it's that thing of if you get open, you're getting the ball. I don't care who you are, whether you're 19, like, you know, whether you're Galladay, whether you're Hawk, whether you're a guy that just came off the practice squad to fill a roster spot. You get open, I'm throwing you the ball. And that's a good thing because it's very hard to scheme against. You can't sit there and go, oh, they're definitely going to go to Kenny. Well, no, if some guy gets open in the flat, he's getting the ball, you got to cover him. So it really creates mismatches and inabilities to double cover guys, Russ.
Oh, it absolutely does. And we've seen it's the linchpin of this Bevel offense, that Stafford early in his career, he was the gunslinger, big, flashy, showing off that he's one of the top arm talents in the league. Mm-hmm. Right? Then he kind of slowed down, looked like he was trying to do more of a game manager thing, and now he is somehow paradoxically both. He is a flashy game manager, right? Mm-hmm. He's making these frisbee toss sidearm throws for a touchdown or a fourth down conversion, but also throwing for less than 250 yards in a game.
Yeah.
He's showing off the arm talent within the structure of the offense, and to your point, it promotes this unpredictability, which is, like, should be priority one in every offense and defensive scheme. So it's nice to see.
You know, this can sound weird. Uh-oh. You know who it kind of reminds me of? Because of where Bevel was before? Russell Wilson.
Whoa.
The ball is going to go.
There are shades of it.
The ball, he's not. Russell Wilson doesn't put up 400 yards a game. He doesn't put up, you know, an insane amount. But every game you can account for him to be 20 to 25 for 250, three touchdowns. It's consistent to the middle, and that's kind of Stafford. Could Stafford go out and chuck it 40 times for 400 yards and five touchdowns? Yes, there might be games we have to do that. But for the most part, Stafford's good right now for 15 to 25, 230, 240, two to three touchdowns, which should be more than enough to keep them in games.
There was a play against Jacksonville where the entire line basically collapses and moves off to Stafford's right. He gets a wide open gap, and it's his big rush game.
Mm-hmm.
And I went, that's Russell Wilson.
Yeah.
And obviously, that hurts for the comparison. Scheme-wise, it was like, I've seen Russell Wilson do that 100 times.
Well, Bevel's bringing it into play. He goes, well, this worked over here. The only difference is, and I don't think either of you will argue with me, Stafford's got the bigger arm. So he can bail them out. He doesn't have the mobility like Russell. But the thing is, he's proven he's at least mobile enough to keep plays alive. He can get some chunk yards. He's never going to rush for 100 yards in a game. He's never going to do anything. But he'll get you a first down, kind of like what you said, Russ. But the thing is, it's Bevel having, I can't say the better quarterback, because I've gone on record, Russell Wilson is the best quarterback on the planet. I don't think it's really close, personally. But Stafford is the bigger arm, so Bevel has the ability to take his offense and stretch it a little further downfield. Deep routes become a little bit more useful for him. Not that Russell still can't chuck it 60 yards, but Stafford's got a 75-yard arm when he wants to, Jay.
I think the good way to wrap that is you have Mr. Unlimited and Mr. Limited, and they're of the same vein, but totally different QBs.
It really is two different QBs, but it's just remarkable how watching a team that comparing Russell Wilson and Matt Stafford is just so insane to do because they're not the same player even remotely. But you see how that offense kind of seems universal. It seems like one that if you can just understand the job and what you're looking for and get the quarterback to buy into it, it seems like an offense that could be successful across the board, which is I like it a lot. Moving on, we are taking on the Atlanta Falcons this week. 1-5 Atlanta Falcons got their first win last week. Lions 2-3. And like I said, Atlanta's favored in this. They're a 59% favorite for this game. The line sits at, what is it? The spread's two and a half. Yeah, 2.5. Over under 55. As I said before, I don't understand how the hell Atlanta is favored in this game. I get they are Atlanta. I get they have the firepower. You're 1-5. You've blown some pretty bad games. You should be 5-1. Atlanta should be 5-1 right now. They just can't find a way to get on their own ways. So for them to be favored in this makes no sense to me. No sense at all. And I'm going to go first here. I think they're going to be 1-6 at the end of this game. I don't think this is going to work out. I think we're seeing an Atlanta team that is, as I said last week when we talked about it, they are a cap 5-win team this year. They're just not good. You knew they weren't going to go 0-16, but I don't see them magically turning it around and finishing this year 11-5. It's just not that kind of team. 55, yeah, I think it's going to go over that. I think this is going to be, I talked about it a minute ago that Stafford can go for the big numbers when he needs to. He might have to this year because if you're Atlanta, your only saving grace is you need to just pile on the points and hope that no one can catch you. So I think this ends up being like a 34-31 game for the Detroit Lions. I think Lions start out good. They have their usual third quarter collapse where they let a team get back into it. Fourth quarter, you're going to have to see Stafford start airing it out and pretty much stacking on the points, hoping that that the defense can get a stop. So I say 34-31, Detroit Lions, Jay.
So Eric is promising us, or he's predicting a heart attack game. Those are the games where we're like, what are we doing? It's the fourth quarter. Why didn't we do this better? Like that's the heart attack cats right there.
We have a terrible defense. We have a terrible, terrible defense. And I had a joke plugged in for that, but I can't put us through that kind of pain right now. So 34-31.
Oh, now you have to do it. You can't tease
it. You teased it. Come on.
I just think we need a better defense. So if I'm Patricia, I go into that locker room and I use the greatest speech in sports history to get these guys going. I use that speech and it sounds a little something like this.
I don't want them to gain another yard.
You blitz all night. If they cross the line of scrimmage, I'm going to take every last one of you out. You make sure they remember forever
that they're the Atlanta Falcons and they're 1-5.
As the one player afterwards goes, Coach, we're the Lions, not the Titans. You know this, right?
I left the Titans out of that. You do not say Titans. No, honestly, if I'm Patricia, I look at these guys and go, they're 1-5. They're going to do anything and everything to win this. We need to put Matt Ryan on his butt as often as possible. This is the one game where you should be going against your Patricia nature and blitzing often. This is not a good line. Matt Ryan is not playing well right now. Get him on his ass. Make it tough for them. Treat it like you're playing the Jacksonville Jaguars because record-wise, you are.
Well, Color, you know, you're running that route on what the Lions are going to do. Russ might have to split the baby on this because I'm about to sit on the other side of the fence of what's happening.
Fair enough.
First of all, I'm telling you I'm fixing the bad juju in the room. I am 0-2 when I'm predicting a Lions game, and I give the other opponent a 0 as their second digit in their score. They've won every time I've given an opponent a 0. So we're the number 30 in particular is banned from this podcast. So we're done with 0 when it comes to predicting scores for me. They've won those games, okay? So that's step number one. Atlanta's only win was against the Vikings, who are god-awful, okay? But what they did do correctly against the Vikings, they held them to 99 rushing yards as a team. I'm seeing AP, who his yards per carry is going down after every single game that he's playing. He can't keep up with who he is. I'm seeing Swift trying to be the number one running back because he just got drafted. He had some, you know, he dropped that first pass, obviously, in game one. And I'm watching Kerryon where we're playing what is Kerryon, who is Kerryon, and why is Kerryon. I think we are going to be limited in the run this week. I think the run game is going to get worse for us as the year goes on. We don't know who's our number one running back. And I think that's a problem because then it makes us more predictable that we can just really take care of, you know, the wide receivers, you know, from the numbers to the sidelines. Like, that's what people, I think, are going to watch for the Lions. So I've got the under. I don't see this being a score fest. I've got the Lions losing 25-28, which sits very close to the spread on this. Give me the under, and give me the Falcons getting their second win on the year.
He took the under. There's your other bet if you're looking for a new one, over-under on this game. I would gladly take the over.
Uh-oh.
You do that one over. We'll come back to you. I got a shootout. I kind of hinted at there. 37-31, I think the Lions are going to take this. Something that Undlin said really stuck with me here. He was asked, how are they going to cover Julio and Ridley this year, or this game? How are they going to handle them? And he said, well, I'd have to rush too, and I know you guys wouldn't be a big fan of that, and that way we can just double the whole time. Which is so... All right, Jay, you're crafty at home. You got a leak in your roof. You don't want your floor to get wet. Do you put a bucket under it, or do you fix the leak? You go to the source, right? Just doubling the guys, that's putting down your bucket. Fix the damn pipe. Get after the quarterback. The two wins that the Lions have, the opposing quarterback has had at least two turnovers. Matt Ryan has three turnovers on the entire year. You have to pressure him. You have to make him turn it over. That is how they can win this game in what might come down to a one-score shootout here. I'm saying we get to 500. Why the hell not?
It's not a bad decision. All right, Jay, you want to take the over-under bet here, man?
Yeah, I wanted any bet to be proposed that I did not create because that turns the juju on its head. Give me two. I want double on this. I want this to be a swing of two. I'm either going to go to -5 or -2 on this, and I'll take the under on 55 and a half. Correct.
55 flat.
55 flat. All right, give me that. Okay. I'll take the under.
Oh God, I can't wait for Sunday. We're going to be getting a text at 3:30. That's going to be like, someone freaking score. or Russ and I are going to be so wrong, and this is going to be like a 3-0 game, and it's going to kill us.
Oh, okay, that'd be brutal.
Speaking of 3-0 scores, we're going to talk about it, guys. We don't ever talk about it. We're going to talk baseball. It's time for baseball. Yeah, but that's the game where you take
time for the last few games of baseball.
You take a stick and you hit a ball with it. Like you try.
That wasn't on the rundown. I didn't see that.
Sorry. Dodgers taking on the Tampa Bay Rays. By the way, just a little side note. I think it was Jay who sent someone took the time to create all the cities Tom Brady has lived in and the greatness that has happened in those cities. And I just love that he comes to Tampa and you got two teams that literally could be back-to-back titles. And who knows what the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are going to do. I'm not putting them as a favorite to win anything this year other than a couple games, but you never know. But it's just cool. And honestly, I enjoyed watching that Rays series against Houston. It was a lot, one, because I wanted to see Houston lose badly. But I also enjoyed watching it. Tampa Bay's got a heck of a team. I also learned that apparently there's more than one Hunter Renfro in professional sports. There's a Hunter Renfro wide receiver for the Las Vegas Raiders.
Oh, yeah.
There's a Hunter Renfro who plays right field for the Tampa Bay Rays. Both of them really good at catching. Learned that.
How do we know it's not the same person?
I checked. I did some looking because I heard Hunter Renfro, and I'm like, Vegas is playing right now. What's he doing? Is he really pulling like a Bo Jackson, Deion Sanders kind of thing here? What are we looking at?
Actually his twin brother, and they just go by the same name.
We just want to keep the brand going well, so no name confusion. Hunter 100.
No offense to the Renfro family, but that last name like does imply some shady shit for some reason in my head. Like that just like screams like I'm going to play two sports and no one's going to know about it because I'm Hunter Renfro.
Shady stuff. I'm going to play two sports and I'm not going to tell anyone. What?
Like soft core shady stuff.
Okay.
Oh, God. Anyway, right now it's a tied series, 1-1. Next game will actually be, I believe, Saturday. And, listen, we're not going to go too in-depth into this because I don't think any of us, other than maybe Russ, want to look that embarrassed by not knowing as much about baseball as we should. I would like to say, though, because we're going to be talking about one of their players later when we get to Play of the Week, I'd like to say, Russ, I don't think you'll disagree with me on this. This is the Dodgers series. Like, they have the better team. They've been there the last couple years. They were robbed of World Series because of Houston kind of thing. It is that thing where if you're the Dodgers, you look at it and go, we have to win this series. We've gotten here too many times. We have, on paper, the team. You can't have Mookie Betts. You can't have Clayton Kershaw. You cannot have all these guys. I'm blanking on his name. Was it Bellinger, I think is his name? Bellinger?
Cody Bellinger.
Yeah.
Yep.
You cannot have these guys and not end up with a World Series at the end of the 2020 year.
Absolutely. Well, it's pocketbook Goliath versus coin purse David is what we're really doing here, the budget race. Right. But it also reminds me of another championship we just saw of a over-talented L.A. team going against a plucky team from Florida. Huh. 2020, huh? It's got like three scripts, and that's it. We just keep going. Speaking of which, if you're the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, the Rams, the Dolphins, or the Chargers, congratulations. You're going to the Super Bowl and winning at least one of them. That's just how this works, apparently, Florida or California. But it's, you're exactly right that this should be the Dodgers series to lose. They're deeper. They're obviously, the payroll is a lot higher. Maybe they can break the Clayton Kershaw curse, finally, maybe, so we can shut up with that damn narrative. And, oh, he was childhood friends with Stafford.
I swear to God,
if you
say that, if he mentions Stafford in this, I'm going to kill him.
I have not gone more than 3 days in what, like the last 2-3 years without this getting brought up? Mm-hmm. It's incredibly frustrating, and I'm hoping that as Stafford continues his childhood tour, because born in Tampa, right, beats Jacksonville, throws his first touchdown in Jacksonville, now he's playing Atlanta, right, went to college in Georgia, now his childhood friend won the World Series, we can put it to bed, right? We've done it. We've made the pilgrimage. It's over. But it's a good team. I love the Rays because, hey, they're analytics heavy, and they brought back the opener as a pitching strategy, which is awesome. But it's the Dodgers. It's the Dodgers all day, and we still even haven't talked about Mookie Betts, who is, God, is he amazing to watch. He's MVP caliber and everything he does. I'm going to talk about him again later, but 3 days in a row, he made catches that blew up Twitter. That's how crazy of a guy we're talking about here.
Talk about him right now. He's a guy that literally from coast to coast, and he literally went from coast to coast. He immediately makes it a team that's already a very good World Series contending team that much better. It's just insane to watch this guy. It really is. And like you said, it is David versus Goliath. It is that team of, if I show you just the stat lines and the names, you're going to go, okay, well, the Dodgers win this, no problem. But Tampa's not going anywhere. They are not just going to hand this over. So, because we have so much to get to, I just want to ask you guys. It's tied 1-1. Jay, I'll let you go first here. Who wins? How many games are we going to see of this World Series?
I'm going to go Dodgers from the pure fact that they got a lopsided victory already with Mookie Betts and what they traded him for with David Price, Cash, and a bunch of other prospects in there. That's just good management. They needed one other piece to win. They got robbed last year. Now they get to go get what they want. Give me the Dodgers in... Dodgers and six. I'll go Dodgers six.
Dodgers and six.
I also, side note, I hate this whole L.A. Florida business. Like, every champion, like, the United States is eventually going to do one of these because all those championships are just on that side of the country.
You hate it because if it keeps going, it gives better chances that San Jose makes a Stanley Cup. That's why you hate it.
Do I put my 2 weeks? Is it like 2 weeks notice or 2 podcast notice for when you're going to talk about San Jose? Like, I just give up?
Yeah. Russ, over to
you. Stop it.
The Lightning, 1-6. The Lakers, 1-6. Again, 2020 has like 3 scripts. It's awful stuff. And it's Florida and California teams winning in 6 games. And I don't know. There's 2 months. Maybe they'll surprise us with the third one. I haven't heard it yet. Dodgers in 6. Jay's dead on. That's what I got too.
Fair enough. By the way, I'm not taking anything away from Mookie Betts is phenomenal. Who would have thought that you needed to improve right field when previously you had Yasiel Puig, who could throw it out of the stadium if he wants to, and that's not good enough, apparently. But Mookie is phenomenal, though. I'm not trying to take – Mookie made a throw like that earlier this year, though, too. He's the guy is just as talented.
Defensive wizard.
I'm gonna go a little crazier here. I think we see the full seven. I do think we get the full seven, but I think we get the full seven in Florida. I think we're going to have a back and forth here. We had Florida, then California, back to Florida. Now I think we see Tampa in seven. This Dodgers team is right there, but I just think that it's that point of we already saw California buy a title. I can't take two purchase titles in 1 year. So I'm going to take the Rays in seven. Smart pick is to take the Dodgers here. It really is. But I'm going to say Rays in seven. I just think they're going to pull this off. It should be a fun one to watch.
Does that mean you think the Rams or the Chargers are going to win the Super Bowl?
Justin Herbert, man. Chargers all day.
Justin, he did all that just to say Justin Herbert.
Say Justin
you
Herbert.
Can't convince me
listen,
otherwise.
All right, listen. Take the last couple weeks. You cannot tell me right now Justin Herbert is not the best rookie quarterback right now.
In a vacuum, sure. He's playing fine.
Burrows is playing good. Justin Herbert is just playing better.
We'll find out after Tua gets a start.
Absolutely. And touching on that a little bit later, touching on that in a minute here. He's playing better right now. And it's all because a 75-year-old doctor just stabbed a guy. But, you know, that is what it is. moving on.
That was the third script for 2020. I forgot.
That was what it was.
There you go.
Moving on. With everything slowing down, you know, best ofs are going to start coming back. Sports is going to thin out a little bit. We're still going to have plenty to talk about with football and, college football getting ready to come back. But as I was driving along the other day, I kept thinking of these questions of, would you buy into it? Are you not for it? So we're going to play a little game of true or false. Okay. I'll ask you both this. We can just go back and forth. Jay, I'll let you go first here. When it is all said and done, we're talking when he retires.
True.
Okay. Fair. Gardner Minshew will be the greatest quarterback the Jaguars have ever had.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
To give you a little preference, he's already fifth all-time on their passing list, but he's 20,000 yards behind the leader, which is Mark Brunell, who was there for, like, 13 years.
I was going to say, on the grave of Mark Brunell? Mm-hmm. How dare you? Who is alive,
well,
I believe.
Who is alive, yes.
Shame on me for not knowing who the hell Mark Brunell is, but I mean, if all he has to do is wear jorts and fart his way to breaking records, I'm going to go ahead and say false. He's done. Like he's a novelty gift shop item, and I accidentally left him at the airport, and I didn't bring him home. So I'm done on Minshew.
Okay, Rusty.
False. He's not going to be the best. First, we take out. No, I'm not even going to entertain it. No, Brunell. It's going to be Brunell. It's going to be Brunell no matter what. Facial hair, sure. We can talk about that.
Okay. Listen, Brunell was amazing, and then you go through the other guys. It's David Garrard, Byron Leftwich, who, by the way, was not in Jacksonville for as long as people would like assume he was.
Right. That's why I had to rule him out. I was going to say maybe Minshew could be Leftwich, but he's going to be better than Leftwich.
Yeah. One of the guys who's actually been there a lot longer than you realize, and he's fourth all-time on their passing, is Chad Henne. Which is crazy to think because you don't really think Chad Henne playing. But, yeah. All right, so, Russ, back over to you now. The Detroit Tigers are a playoff-contending team in 3 years if they get rid of Avila today.
Yes. Yes, please.
Jay?
Yeah, I buy that crazy. I mean, the alternative has to be better than what you currently have. So I'm going to go yes on that.
Okay, fair enough. Jay, you're going to love this one. Blashill is the first of the current four coaches to lift a title in Detroit.
You know what? I'm going to go yes. I have turned a page with Jeff Blashill. If he didn't get fired from day one with Steve Yzerman, There's some hopes. He has won. He won in GR. Everyone knows what he did with the Griffins and the Calder Cup and all that.
Yep.
Blashill has had less than desirable pieces around him, and it's a long process, and he's going to reap the benefits in the future. I'm on Blashill again. A win first.
All right.
Blashill will be the next one to raise a title, it will not be with Detroit. It'll be as an assistant coach with somebody else. Okay. Because Patricia's not. He's not. I don't even think New England would take him back. Dwayne Casey's not going anywhere else. Tigers don't even have manager.
True.
I'm going to say, honestly, if all four stay, it's Blashill in Detroit. If Blashill goes, then I think it's probably going to be, of the current guys, it's Dwayne Casey with the Pistons. It's just going to be a little bit. I never said the time frame here. It's just the next guy to do it.
I'd venture to say that no current coach lifts a title as a Detroit coach.
Okay. Jay's going to love this one, but Russ gets to go first. Russ, the Lions draft a quarterback in the first round within the next 3 years.
Ooh. Can I get a fact check? How old is Stafford?
32. He's a year older. He's the same. He's the same age as me. He was just born earlier in the year.
Oh, that's a really good one. I'm going to go false because they're going to hit. They're going to hit on a third round pick in the next 2 years. And he'll be the heir apparent.
Okay.
You didn't have to ask me.
I don't have to, but I see what's in your background, so I know how much you want it. So I'm just, go ahead.
I just for once, I want to, like, when you're a kid and you go to the bowling alley, because, like, you do that when you're a kid, and you got the little, like, 75-cent claw machine, and that one time you get that toy out, give me a toy. Give me something to marvel over and watch it pass or fail. Like, yes, please. True.
I will say yes, but because I said it was first round, I didn't say where. I think it's going to be more like what Green Bay did. They're going to draft him late in the first round, knowing, all right, we're biting the bullet on a first round pick, but we're getting a guy that can sit behind Matt for a couple years and learn. That good talent will be there that they know they just can't pass on. It'll be that kind of thing. I don't think it'll be a Justin Herbert, Joe Burrow situation where we're drafting the guy that's like Tua going to get thrown into a situation where Tua has no business playing right now. Ryan Fitzpatrick is playing very good football, but for some odd reason, Miami wants him on the field. So I think it'll be more that. They'll draft him in the first round, but it will not be the situation where everybody assumes. All right, this one's going back a little bit. This is more of you have to think in the abstract.
Uh-oh.
If the Pistons never trade Chauncey Billups, the going-to-work Pistons win another title.
Who's going?
By the way, Russ is frozen right now, and he's the face that he's looking, it's frozen. He's very skeptical. It's over to Jay.
I am unqualified for this position.
So you're Al Avila. Okay, gotcha.
Yes, yes.
All right, well,
I can't do that.
That's fine. Russ, over to you.
I'm looking up exactly what year he was traded.
Like 07, 08. You got to think, though, the Pistons at that time owned the East. They made the Eastern Conference Finals every year. They were a perennial 45 to 50 wins a season team. They were just the fact of they either needed to add another piece or they needed to go to full-on rebuild, and they chose the full-on rebuild and obviously never got back. So while Russ theorizes, I will say yes. I think if Chauncey never leaves, I think they make one more good go at it, but I think it would have had to been kind of like what they were in 04. They needed to be everything working perfectly for them. But I think, yes, they get to the finals and make one more go at it, probably win one more title, but then they win it, and then Dumars realizes, okay, we gotta gear up for the next haul because we're right at the max of what we can do.
I'm going to go with no.
Okay.
They would not win a title because this was Chauncey was 32, right? We got some guys that are really getting up there. Oh, Rasheed would have been old at that point. I think Ben's gone. Yeah, you're Aaron Aflalo is sitting there probably starting.
Well, it's Aaron Aflalo and Rodney Stuckey were the backcourt of the future.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think you could get over as LeBron was ascending into his kingship at that point.
Okay, that's fine. Jay, you want to weigh in, or you're going to accept to be Switzerland and just stay neutral here?
I mean, the only thing I have to offer is I feel like Rasheed was just always looking old. Like, he always just looked like an old man.
He did always look old.
He had a bald patch at like 22 when he came into the NBA. So, all right, we're gonna break order because in theory, it should be Russ. So I'm gonna let Russ go here because this one's centered right for Russ, and we know the pain, Russ. If Michigan goes straight from Lloyd Carr to Jim Harbaugh, we never see the Michigan drop off.
True. Yeah, you don't see it to the same extent.
Which, by the way, just to give you preference, Jim Harbaugh was in his first year at San Diego State when the transition happened.
Right. Well, because the biggest thing that happened there was the bungled transition into a spread offense in the division and a player base that was not ready to make that change.
Yep.
There's plenty of reasons to expect that it wasn't going to go well year one, and it never recovered. So you don't even try that transition if Harbaugh comes in. So it would have been a hiccup probably, but I don't think we wouldn't have seen Stephen Threet that whole thing.
All right, Jay.
The alternative to your question is Rich Rod and who else?
Yeah, Brady Hoke.
Right?
Brady Hoke.
Which I'm gonna be fair here. Brady Hoke never stood a chance. Brady Hoke was them trying to reestablish the Michigan man. It was nothing more than that. Brady Hoke was
a mouthpiece.
Well, he was a placeholder no matter what. Like he could have gone out there and done three straight nine in three seasons. He was a placeholder until they found the guy they wanted. So Brady Hoke never really stood a chance. He was just Michigan trying to apologize for Rich Rod, which at the time Rich Rod was he was a great coach. He just wasn't a great coach for what the Big Ten and Michigan were doing at that time.
It just bothers me that I wear more headsets when we record than he does on game days.
It's very true. Oh. Very true.
There you go. I mean, I don't know because I look at what Harbaugh hasn't done. I don't know if you'd be spiraling into the despair that you did with Rich Rod. But, at the same token, you still haven't gone to Indy in 5 years. The goal would have still been from Carr to Harbaugh or going from Hoke to Harbaugh. The goal is still to get to Big Ten championships, and you didn't do either in either scenario. So it may be a little better. I'll give you a little better, a little extra seasoning on your steak.
My two things of why I think Michigan was trending towards probably declining a little bit, not to what they did, but my two things. One, if you go from Lloyd Carr to Harbaugh, you don't have to deal with the recruiting classes needing to thin out again. You go from Chad Henne to Ryan Mallett, who fits everything we're doing right now at Michigan.
Probably stays.
And it's weird to say, Andrew Luck might not be what Andrew Luck was, because Harbaugh would have been there doing that with Ryan Mallett. Ryan Mallett may have actually had an NFL career. So instead of missing the plane on the one game he was actually going to start for Baltimore. But it's that. And I think that you don't have to deal with that class. You don't have to deal with, because you got to understand, Brady Hoke embraced Devin Gardner and Denard Robinson. He embraced having those guys and he built offenses for them. Jim Harbaugh wouldn't have done that. Jim Harbaugh would have kind of done what Rich Rod did. He would have been like, okay, we have all these guys. We're still running my offense. So he would have had Lloyd Carr's classes, and there wouldn't have been that. We would have stuck with that ground and pound, power eye kind of offense, maybe adapted a little bit. So that's what I feel.
I'm totally here for the alternate universe where Harbaugh is at Michigan, so Andrew Luck doesn't get drafted high. He goes in the fourth round or so. And he pulls an Aaron Rodgers and sits behind someone for 4 years, right? Learns the game a little more, is a little more conservative, doesn't get the concussions, is still in the league, is racking up MVPs.
Look, I love Andrew Luck. Andrew Luck was one of my favorite players. And you got to think, Andrew Luck had the toughest thing ever. He replaced Peyton Manning. He took Peyton Manning's job from him, a job that everybody would have thought was never touchable. So it's the thing. Andrew Luck was amazing. But you got to think, Ryan Mallett could have been that. Ryan Mallett really could have had a chance, but instead he committed to a school, he came to a school, and he got 1 year before realizing none of what you're doing is going to work for me. So it really, he kind of threw him into a bad situation. Jay, we're coming right to you now. Connor Cook is the greatest quarterback of the last 20 years for Michigan State.
Oh, good God.
By the way, I have
20 years?
Last 20 years, since 2000.
Well, Rocky Lombardi's there right now.
Dude, I swear to God, if I see that golden fucking hair on Saturday, I'm turning the TV off. I can't do it. Him and what, Collins or whoever our running back is? I just shut it down. Shut it down.
So, so you know, these are the bigger names of the last.
Ooh,
of the
that's
last
interesting.
Four. Brian Hoyer has 6,159 yards, 35 touchdowns to 23 interceptions. Cousins has 9,000 yards, 66 touchdowns to 30 interceptions. Drew Stanton, 6,500 yards, 42 touchdowns to 28. So he basically went 2-1. And Connor Cook, 9,194 yards, 71 touchdowns to 22 interceptions.
Connor Cook was not a victim. He was awarded the ability to survive in a crafted team already that was established before him. It's not Connor Cook. It's Cousins. Cousins might have a little bit smaller numbers, but I liked that. It was Cousins at the time. That was him.
Okay.
I'm also going Cousins. Yes, threw for fewer yards. He actually had a higher rating.
Yeah.
And yard per attempt and a completion percentage. No, I'll give it to Cousins. He was a big reason why Michigan State burst onto the national scene the way they did. He made Connor Cook possible.
It's fair. I agree, though. I it is Kirk Cousins. I just wanted to see if, because a lot of people hear the numbers and they immediately jump onto like, oh, that has to be him then. But that's not always the thing, because one thing that doesn't show, and I don't have the records in front of me, doesn't show, like you said, Cousins put them on the map. He made them a 10-2. We're going to make the playoffs. We're going to make, you know, Rose Bowls. He made them that team. Connor Cook inherited that. He really did, just because of the fact that you have to leave college eventually. So it was that kind of thing.
But what about Jeff Smoker?
I thought about that. I just couldn't go that far back. Stanton was as far back as I could go.
You guys listen.
Jeff Smoker, third all-time passing yards for State. -218 rushing yards in his college career.
Yeah.
Stop it. Listen, I have to deal with a first-time head coach, new offense. Like, this is all brand new. This is all, like, day one on Saturday. It's going to hurt. I'm already ready for pain.
It's going to hurt. All right, Russ, over to you. Got to go back a little bit here, but this one left a bad taste in our mouth, so I don't know how this one's going to play out. If he never leaves Detroit, Ndamukong Suh is a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Ooh. I'll say no. Yeah, no, I don't think he is. I would say he's not even a Hall of Famer right now.
No,
everything has tapered off so drastically. But he actually, I think his path to the Hall of Fame was leaving Detroit, right?
Oh, okay.
Because I don't think if the Lions kept him, they were winning a Super Bowl. And he needed to be in the conversations for Super Bowls to get that Hall of Fame recognition. As a D-tackle, you got to do so much extra to get that kind of attention and notoriety.
Does he have one, though?
A Super Bowl?
No, he hasn't got one yet, has he?
No, he hasn't.
Because he went to Miami, then he went to the Rams with Donald for a year or two. And then he went back to, and then now he's in Tampa Bay. So,
Tampa.
Okay. Yeah, no, I was just double checking that.
Jay? Until this year when he gets
until
one.
This year, yeah. Jay?
Yeah, my answer is no, too. But the notion that he left because he's chasing championships, I just look at like a Dez Bryant being rumored to coming back, Antonio Brown. You see what Le'Veon Bell is doing. Like, I think there's a point in time where people are like, hey, I did this because I had an idea of me lifting up a Lombardi trophy. People turn that brain on, and you're spot on, Russ. You ain't getting that in Detroit. Get the hell out of here. Your dreams will not come to fruition here.
Okay.
So I'll say no.
They could.
I'm going to disagree with both of you, because what Russ said, I think I disagree with. It has tapered off since he left, and he needed to have that title in there. But I also think if he stays here, there's no doubt, even to today, he's the best defensive player we have on the team. He was highlighted more, and he just was that guy. He was always the guy that seemed to come through. So I think, in turn, The numbers are just there. It, whether he has a title or not, the numbers are just there. He looks that much better because he stayed here. Whereas he went to Miami, and again, I think a lot of it was he had issues too, but he went to Miami, and then I think he went to Los Angeles and realized, oh, wait. Aaron Donald, that is a Hall of Famer, and I'm just not quite there. I mean, let's be honest. If you put them together, Aaron Donald is a far superior athlete. So it's just that thing is I think he stays in Detroit. He's the big fish in the little pond. I think he went to L.A. and other places and realized, oh, wait, no, I'm still very good, but I'm not at the tier that everybody thought I was. Because he has kind of disappeared a little bit, other than, you know, him and Aaron Rodgers having a little screaming match at the end of the first half last week because came in a little late on him. It's just the thing. So, yes, I think he stays in Detroit. I think a Hall of Fame conversation is guaranteed. Whereas right now he needs to do something on the other half for it to be a guaranteed conversation. And who knows? He's been in the league for 10 years now. Who knows how much longer he's really going to play? So we'll see. We're going to golf here in a minute. So why not have the last question have something to do with golf? Jay?
Oh, baby.
Jay, I'm looking at you. In our lifetime, assuming we all live happily to 90 years old and all that, in our lifetime, will we ever see someone rival what Tiger Woods did in his prime?
No. That's it. Like, it took me 2 seconds to think about that. No. When we talk about golf, it is so wildly inconsistent. Like, the consistency factor, if that's even a thing in golf, it's just like, oh, this guy won 17 years ago. Like, what Tiger did and the way that he was just banging out championships. I don't think anyone's going to be able to do that. Try to throw 40 pounds.
Love the word,
love
the fact that you used banging out, because he was banging out a lot of things in that prime.
I'm just, first word that came to my mind. Sorry. Word association. Tiger Woods bang.
Yeah. Okay.
No. Tiger's king.
Yeah. Russ?
So are we talking about his play on the course or his philandering off the course? Because I know one's more likely that we're going to see than the other.
Probably.
I'll say yes. We call it a generational talent for a reason, because it comes around once in a generation. Assuming we live to see 90 or so, not one of those generations are going to come around. It won't be many. Maybe we'll talk about one guy.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be somebody. That's how sports goes.
Okay. To preface that, Tiger Woods is the only living person or only person to ever play on the PGA Tour that held all four majors at the same time, winning. He won the U.S. Open, the Open, the PGA, and then the following year, he won the Masters. So he's the only person to ever have all four trophies sitting in his house at the same time. That's why it's called the Tiger Slam. And he's only the fifth person to ever get the career Grand Slam, youngest to ever do it, 82 wins. And the reason I brought that up is because it ties into my very first question. Tiger is right now tied with Sam Snead for 82 all-time wins on the PGA Tour, which is number one. He got his 82nd this time last year at the Zozo Championship, obviously played over in Korea. So I ask, before we get into everything else about it, Russ, does Tiger break the record at the Zozo?
No. I don't think he breaks it at the Zozo, because it's, even if I say he's the favorite, what is that, a 20% chance, a 15% chance that he wins it against the field? I think he'll break it. I just don't think it'll be this particular tournament.
Okay. Jay?
No on Tiger, specifically with his driver. That has never been his club of choice recently. I just think that Tiger's the type of guy now where he has to, like, really focus in on one tournament and prepare for that, like, 8 months in advance to have a shot at breaking it. So it won't be at the Zozo, but I don't know. Tiger's just like, it's getting to the point now where it's like, all right, buddy, thanks for playing.
Mm-hmm. Well, and he has said that him and Phil have both said that with the Masters 3 weeks away, these tournaments are starting to now become more just optional, because there's a big one coming in a couple weeks and it means a lot to everyone. So I get that. I agree. I don't think that he gets the 83rd here. I think he gets the 83rd sooner rather than later. Where that is, I don't know. I know we're going to talk about it in a couple weeks, but I'll say right now, I don't think he's in the right place right now to repeat at Augusta. I think he'll go out there and have a good showing, but I think it took Tiger 10 years to win another major. I don't think it's going to be another 10 years, but I think if Tiger's going to do it, he needs to be so dialed in. It's just ridiculous. And I just don't think he's, like you said, Jay, with the driver, he's not there right now. So we'll see what happens with it. We're going to make our predictions. I sent these to you guys late, so the fact that you have, you know, pairings is just phenomenal. I'm going to go first here, and I'm going to say that, listen, the guy's been on the senior tour for a couple months now. He's already won twice, the only two times he started. He's won on the senior tour. I'm going with the pairings of Phil Mickelson, Rory McIlroy, and Webb Simpson for the fact that, listen, Phil is on fire right now, and it leads to the Masters. I personally think Phil is looking at these as optional because I think Phil sees the Masters and the time of year and what's going on and how he's hitting the ball right now as his best option or best chance to win one more major before it's all over. Now, whether he does that at Augusta remains to be seen. You got to see how he plays. But he sees it because you got to think, Augusta is the one course that doesn't change. They play it every year. Everything's right. I mean, they can move a tree, plant a bush, whatever, but they don't really change that course too much. So Phil knows that course. He's already got three green jackets, which means he knows how to win there. So I think the next couple weeks he's going to be wanting to dial that in. And look, Rory needs Augusta. He needs a Masters jacket to complete the Grand Slam. So he needs to get it dialed in. Where better to do that than in Sherwood Oaks, California? Great, like, you know, top golf. Webb Simpson, he's a great golfer. He's won on the tour last year. So it's a great pairing. So I'm going to take Phil, Rory, and Webb Simpson, Jay.
Could you imagine Mickelson winning the Masters? Like, he's the type of guy that would strike me that, like, he would putt that final putt on 18 and retire on the spot and just be like, I'm out, bitches. Like, LeBron's going to shoot up, like, some half-court shot at halftime of a game, and it's going to be a certain date for a certain player and a certain Taco Tuesday, and he'll retire dramatically as well. It will be a Taco Tuesday that LeBron – I want to place that future bet. I like your pairing, getting back to business here. I have went Rory, 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 Rory as often as possible. I'm fixing my juju, and I'm not going Rory this week because this will be the week that he wins and all is right in my betting world again. I'm going with Rose, Rahm, and Hideki Matsuyama.
Matsuyama,
thank you. Justin Rose has not won since 2019. So I'm going to say it one more time, but get rid of the last name. Justin hasn't won since 2019. And I personally feel that statement. Okay. So for that reason, I'm going Rose, Rahm, and Matsuyama. Hideki was the runner up last year in the Zoho. So that also works if you're going to look from a, what have you done lately for me, perspective, but Justin getting a win in 2020 sounds very nice right now.
Sounds very nice. Rusty, over to you.
Okay, so I know nothing about this tournament, except for the fact that it's called the Zozo, right? So we're dealing with double letters here.
Mm-hmm.
There's only one of those groupings that all three players, their last names, all have a double letter in a row. We got an OO, we got an FF, we got another FF. Woods, Wolf, Shoffley. I don't care that Tiger won it last year because, hey, different course, different country. What I do care about is that it's at the Sherwood Country Club, which gets its name from Lake Sherwood. Now, that used to be called Potrero Lake, right? But it got changed in 1921 because they filmed the movie Robin Hood. What rhymes with hood? What's another name for a forest? Woods, baby. Give me them.
So wait. It's genius, and I love it. I applaud you forever. You don't think he's going to get the 83rd win at the course, but you're picking his pairing. I love that.
He'll do well enough.
No, and I love it. I love it. That's great. That's great. All right, so everybody went a different way this week. It's phenomenal. It's, you know, means that we're, just means I have to find 9 different players on the PGA Tour app to keep track of.
One programming note. Out of Russ's household, and maybe this is a little too much information, but between Russ making me smile on his universal connection and Russ's wife sending me dad jokes once a day, you guys are just, you are a smile factory over there, so I appreciate you guys.
It's the number one household in America right now. They're just
Russ and Mana 2020. I'm voting for you.
They're producing great things over there. It's awesome.
Getting misty over here.
All right, so before we get to plays of the week, there's one more big thing I do want to talk about. The Houston Open, which will be held the week before the Masters, has announced that they will have 2,000 people a day on the grounds for the tournament. Kind of the first time we're going to see mass crowds since all of this started. Phil Mickelson has already come out saying that while he thinks that the PGA Tour has done phenomenal, players have been all about testing and making sure that everybody's safe, he thinks that the Houston Open will handle it the best they can. He does not like the risk because this is a tournament where some guys are playing just to get enough points to qualify for the Masters because it's an invitation-only tournament. But other guys, that's your last chance to play a real competitive round to dial everything in before you go to Augusta for the week. So he doesn't like it. He doesn't like the risk that you could go there and someone could get through the screening process somehow. I mean, who hasn't heard of a person testing positive who was really negative or vice versa? This testing process isn't 100%, people. It's that thing of, so I want to ask you both, how do you feel about a week before the biggest tournament of the year, the one that people literally have been waiting since April to see because we didn't get it in April? How do you feel about the fact that they are going to try to open up the gates and let people in to what appears to be a pretty effective thing they have going on right now? They've only had a handful of people test positive, and all those people have screened and or have quarantined and came back. No problems, Russ.
It's an unnecessary risk. If I want to compete in the Masters and I don't have to be at this tournament, I'm not going anywhere near it. It's a week, right? Look, you get it, you're done. Right, you don't have the chance. It's too soon. It's too close. Unless they come out with some crazy thing where they keep people like in pods far enough away that they're away from the golfers, then maybe we can talk. But I don't think they're going to go to those extraordinary lengths. That'd be fun to watch.
Just make a big hockey rink with like plexiglass boards all the way around.
I've been waiting for that, for actually hockey, to just make it bubble hockey, right? Like literally put a bubble over top of the ice and then section fans off with that, and we'll all sit in plexiglass and we'll come and we'll show up in the Pope Mobile and we'll all be good. Or or you can realize that golf makes way more off of their broadcast. This is an unnecessary risk to your biggest product left in the season, and just come get them next season. Mm-hmm. This is unnecessary.
Jay?
As a sports fan, I look at what's happening with golf, and then I see the Big Ten telling me that cheerleaders and the band can't show up. I see the NFL scheduling double Monday night football games because they have issues over there. I see the PGA inviting fans. I see college basketball having issues on how they're actually going to conduct their business when the season kicks up for them. I'm fucking confused is what I am right now. And I'm like, some people are getting complacent and they're like, well, I can give you a hug. I love you. But it's like, I'm at the point now where I'm like, I'm protecting me and mine, and I don't care what the rules are because there's no universal, like, this is what you do to tie your shoes. You can sit down, you can bend over, someone can help put your shoe on, but this is how you tie a shoe. We don't know how to stop COVID, and I'm dealing with all, like, it makes no sense to me, and I'm done. I'm going to worry about my house. I'm going to worry about my faith and my body. I don't care what everyone else does because I'm over it. And maybe I'm getting complacent, but it's like, extraly cautious, complacent, because it doesn't make sense. Why are we inviting fans?
Yeah, no, I'm with you guys. But I think the other thing that's going to hurt them is, depending on how everything goes the next couple weeks and how it is in Texas with COVID, I think you're also jeopardizing your field, because guys like Tiger and Brooks Koepka and Rory and Phil are not going to risk going there because don't get me wrong, these paydays are still paydays, but those are the guys that don't need the payday. Like they have enough money, they can afford to skip weeks, pick their schedule, and guess what? All of them want a green jacket. That you play this game for that. So it is that thing of you're jeopardizing the field of, it's the week before the Masters. You could have a lot of big names coming to Houston to get that last little bit of competitive golf in, because it is different between a practice round and real, when you have to make that putt for something. You're jeopardizing the field that you could get, and I hate to say second tier, because all of these guys are phenomenal at what they do. I mean, you and I know, Jay, you know how hard it is to hit a golf ball. It's a lot harder when you got to bend it around a tree on command, that you're going to get second tier players, and it's just not the same thing. So if I'm Houston, I think I kind of rethink this. We have a winning formula on the PGA Tour right now. I don't see the reason to break it. Like, that's like looking at baseball and going, hey, look, those teams tested positive early, but it's all really good. Let's bring people. Let's bring everybody back in the stadium. That doesn't make sense.
You know who's doing it right now?
Who?
Bryson. Bryson's at home. He's working on his swing. He got his swing up to like 80 miles per hour or something like that the other day. He said, oh, screw the Zozo. Screw this, screw that. I'm going to work on this. I don't have to worry about COVID. I'm going to come. I'm going to win. I'm going to leave with my money. So
blabbering with unfactual information, which is confusing the general public.
I just imagine him. He's got one of those like beer hats on, but instead of beer, it's like a protein shake and raw eggs. And he's just doing curls, sucking out of both of them. Just working on his swing, baby.
Oh, I love it.
All right. Well, let's we're running short on time, but we want to get to the final part of this show because we haven't been able to get to it the last couple weeks. We finally have a chance. We're on to plays of the week. This one, it's pretty diverse. We kind of went all over the spectrum here. Russ stuck to the diamond for some reason. He just didn't really want to venture outside of it. So I'm going to let you go first here, Russ. Either way you want to go with it, your plays of the week.
Well, we'll do it in chronological order because, well, that's the way I picked. My funny play of the week was the first public case of playing with yourself that's actually socially acceptable. Will Smith hitting a home run off of Will Smith. Bat meets ball, you are in fact playing with yourself. And he got jiggy with it. It is literally life imitating art with the Gemini Man from Will Smith going against himself yet again. And hey, Will Smith came out on top.
The runners will go. There they go. And a high fly ball to left. Back at the wall, it is gone. Will Smith, the biggest swing of his young career. And the Dodgers jump on top, 4-2, here in the sixth.
That was just worth its weight in gold. my play of the week, again, like you said, staying on the diamond, because if baseball's back on the pod, I'm making sure baseball's back on the pod here. We're going to Mookie, right? Third catch in as many days, second home run stealing catch in as many days. Robs Freddie Freeman in what was a one-run game that they end up winning and stealing the series. So, Mookie, do you just do that thing that you do, and we'll just keep watching.
Freddie Freeman lifts this one way up there. He's like, Betts didn't see it at first. Now goes back, jumps, and he does it again. Mookie putting his stamp all over the NLCS defensively.
Give me more Mookie all the time. I love it.
More Mookie. I like it. That sounds like something from a Chinese restaurant. Can I have some more Mookie? Is there any more Mookie anywhere?
Watch yourself.
You know that Mookie is actually short for Marcus?
Is it really?
His first name is Marcus. His first name is Marcus.
Oh, so it's a nickname. Okay, cool.
So now, Justin Mookie.
Yeah, so Justin Mookie. Justin Mookie. All right, Jay. Yeah, you had a very lovely fact there, so I'm going to let you go next.
All right, so I'm going to stay in Florida for a minute because all my plays involve Dolphins right now. We're going to get sentimental, and then we're going to have some fun. Play of the week is one Tua Tagovailoa sitting on the 15-yard line after his first – I mean, he played a couple snaps in the fourth. Sitting on the 15-yard line just fully allowing the stadium just to cave into his soul. It's an empty stadium. He's just sitting there. I have to imagine that feeling is like, mama, I made it. Like, I'm sitting here. I finally got to achieve a dream. I get to be named the starter in about 3 days, and I don't even know it. Fitzpatrick's going to get really cranky on social media about it. Like, just soaking in a moment like that in the midst of 2020, like, that's powerful shit, man. So that's my play of the week, even though it's just a Adam Schefter Instagram post. So I really liked that.
Okay.
Should I do the audio? I'll reenact the audio for the podcast. Ready? Here we go. And that was the play of the week. my funny play of the week, not a lot to describe it. The play is actually not that funny. Like, it's kind of comical that the Jets, first of all, are featured in our podcast, and a ball gets caught behind their back. But it reminded me of some childhood moments that I'll describe after we play the clip here, the funny play of the week.
He has him in the deep half of the field. Watch him turn his head and make a play on the ball. And once he does that, it ends up on his right cheek.
And he caught it behind him.
And it just stays there.
What a play.
So phenomenal, right? He gets an interception. He's catching it behind his back. All it did is remind me all the times of, like, I go to recycle a bottle. And I'm like, I had to monotonously, like, walk to the garage to go get rid of something. I'll throw it behind my back, catch it above my head. I'll bounce it off the wall. I'll put it, like, bring it back down. I do this with socks. I do this with recyclables. I do this with cans, the kids' toys. I don't know if anyone's ever done that before. But, like, that, like, I've been practicing to make that interception my whole life. And I'm pretty sure I can make the Jets roster and recreate that play for them. So. I'm ready to be a pro athlete, is what I'm trying to tell you.
Oh, I'm ready to see it, man. Watching you try to cover DeAndre Hopkins would be phenomenal. I would love to see it. Love to see it, yeah. All right, moving on to my plays of the week. I'm going to go funny because we live in a world now where I've said it millions of times. We're reaching a point now where refs are about to become obsolete because we can just watch the replay and figure out if there was a penalty or not. So in those times, why someone thinks you can get away with dick kicking someone doesn't make sense to me. I just don't get it. But you know what? It's still funny. So that's my play of the week.
He decided to go Diego Maradona on J.J. Weaver. You got the left foot? No, let's give a little bit more.
Yeah, don't think they allow that.
No, they don't allow that. Like, what makes you think you can do that? By the way, that was a Tennessee-Kentucky game. It's just, it's one of those things where, like, these guys don't seem to realize you're on a football field. There's millions of people watching you. There's always going to be a camera on you. Even if it's not the play, the camera is on you. So just, like, be smart. You would think be smart anyway, Jay.
What is it about someone getting kicked in the genitals that is just dumbfoundingly awesome and, like, hilarious? Like, why? Who decided? That's hilarious. Doesn't matter who's getting it done. It's funny.
I don't know. It's just hilarious though. But it's just the fact that he thought the camera wasn't going to catch it, and everyone's going to know about it is just astounding to me. So anyway, for my play of the week, I decided to go with the guy who's just tearing up the NFL. I don't know. Did any of us project him to be the leading rusher at the end of this year? Because he's looking like he might be able to do it. I'm talking about Derrick Henry. I'm talking about the fact that he just just got 100 yards in one play, and it sounded a little something like this.
Henry breaking free. 20, 25, off to the races. They may not catch him. They won't catch him. Touchdown.
This guy is, and if anybody wants to debate it with me, I'd love it, but this guy is the best running back on the planet right now. He can do everything. He can outrun you. He can also, as Josh Norman can attest to, he can also kill you by just running right through you and making, I wanted to say this last week and we didn't get to it. He, that run against Norman, to me, that looked like that freshman football game where there's the one kid who's already hit puberty. So you just put him at running back because if nothing else, no one's going to be able to tackle him. And that's what it was. It was a freshman corner trying to tackle a kid who should be playing on varsity, but they don't need him on varsity right now. So he's just going to play freshman football for a year.
In which, if you're ever looking to watch some blood sport, Derrick Henry did as a high school student. It looks exactly like that.
Wait, you're saying a guy with immense talent had immense talent earlier in life? That doesn't make sense.
An immense size. He was so much bigger than everyone else.
This is false. Nick Saban creates those players when they come there. They're nothing until Nick Saban gets his hands on them. That's what we're led to believe. As always, it's another great episode. Lots of fun with these two. We've got Masters talk coming up. I'm excited for. We didn't get to it today, but I'm interested to see what these guys think about the new match, Jay. You got Phil, you got Steph Curry, you got Charles Barkley, you got Peyton Manning. Should be another fun one to watch. So we got a lot to talk about in the upcoming weeks. And get to recap our first Big Ten game next week, guys. Got the Big Ten coming back. Should be fun to watch. Yeah, I know. It's not fun for you. It might be fun for us. So my thanks to Sergeant Salty Justin Marcus.
This is why I'm cheering on Justin Rose. It's not a good time. I got Mel Tucker installation 1.0 this Saturday. So can't wait, gang.
There you go. And the stat man, Russ Ivanek.
We got to talk about a Lions win. We got to talk about baseball. And we got to give Jay Mookie over there a new nickname. This was a full and good pod. I enjoyed it.
That's an amazing pod. And as always, I'm your host, Eric Dorsch. There's one small step for us, one giant leap back in Detroit sports broadcasting.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. May God have mercy on your soul.